Two Journeys Ministry with Pastor Andy Davis. Biblical teaching to guide you to spiritual maturity.
And now Ruth chapter 2. Ruth meets Boaz. Two godly people find each other. So as we continue to unfold this marvelous little story of Ruth, we come to chapter 2. Here in this drama, we see two high-quality people display their character for all time. The Bible gives exalted doctrine by which sinners can be saved. The central doctrine is the gospel of Jesus Christ, of his death and resurrection. Along with that is the exalted law of God, especially the two great commandments and the Ten Commandments. But in addition to doctrine, the Bible gives us examples, people we can and should imitate. Hebrews 13:7 says, "Remember your leaders who spoke the word of God to you. Consider the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith." And again, Romans 4:12 calls on us to walk in the footsteps of the faith that our father Abraham had. So Ruth 2 gives us two excellent role models, especially when it comes to gender-based roles. The timeless pattern for marriage in Ephesians 5 is that all marriages are pictures of Christ and his church. The husband plays the Christ-like role, and the wife plays the role of the church. The godly husband is to love his wife and lay down his life for her, to protect her and provide for her, feeding her and seeing to her bodily needs as if they were his own. The wife is to submit to his godly leadership and bless him in ways only a woman can do, bringing beauty and order and children into his life. These gender-based roles have been openly challenged my entire life. Feminism was growing stronger and stronger in the 60s, questioning the validity of all gender-based distinctions, throwing the sexes into such confusion that we still have not recovered. In recent years, I've heard much about toxic masculinity and many stories of male oppression and abuse by men, and I truly believe that many of those stories have occurred and severely damaged wives and children. Therefore, the concept of patriarchy has been overtly opposed and hated. It's almost a curse word in our present cultural context. Patriarchy, the idea that the husband is the head of the wife and the head of his family, called by God to lead his family, to use his authority to serve and protect his family. That's biblical patriarchy. The rule means literally rulership by fathers. But however much feminism has used horrible anecdotes to challenge the entire concept of leadership in the home by husbands and fathers, it is most certainly the biblical worldview. But the Bible is even more against tyranny and abuse of these roles than any modern feminist could ever be. It is a sacred calling to be a godly husband and father and to use that position of authority well. And we need godly role models, both men and women, to show us how it should be done. Ruth is a godly role model of submission, diligent labor, humility, thankfulness, and faith. Boaz is a godly role model of a man of standing who treats those under him with gentleness and tremendous protection, making sure life under his authority is a life of blessedness to all he is caring for. He is also a man of faith, submitting to the will of God and reverent toward him. So, Boaz makes his appearance, Ruth 2:1. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing, whose name was Boaz. So Naomi's connection to Elimelech's clan, that connection will be essential to the story going forward. Now Boaz is called a man of standing. It's literally a mighty man of wealth or a strong leader in the community. This implies the blessing of the Lord and the esteem of the surrounding community there in Bethlehem. Well, Ruth in verse 2 asks to glean. It says in Ruth 2:2, "Ruth and Moabitess said to Naomi, 'Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor.' Naomi said to her, 'Go ahead, my daughter.'" So much is implied in this. First, the concept of gleaning in the fields must have been taught to Ruth by Naomi. This was God's provision for the poor. In Leviticus 19:9 and 10, it says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over the vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the alien. I am the Lord your God. Also note that Ruth is submissive to Naomi. She sees her as her authority, asking permission to go and glean. And see this also, the concept of favor. The word could be translated grace, unmerited favor by God. It appears three times in this chapter, here and in two other places. In Ruth 2:10, she says, "At this she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed," speaking of Boaz, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" And then a few verses later, Ruth 2:13, she says again to Boaz, "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord." So we see Ruth in the fields of Boaz. And it's interesting here. Is this the luck of the draw? Hardly. But look at verse 3. It says in Ruth 2:3, "So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who is from the clan of Elimelech." Now, the Hebrew word, which is translated in this translation, "as it turned out," the Hebrew word is mikra. It points toward what seems like a remarkable chance or coincidence or good luck. It just so happened that. That's how the word is usually translated in other places in the Old Testament. So it just so happened that she ends up in Boaz's field. Well, it's not an accident. God works all things after the counsel of his will. Nothing is accidental or left to random chance. Well, we see also, as the whole interaction begins, Boaz's godly greeting, and this gives us a glimpse into his piety. In Ruth 2:4, it says, "And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.' And they answered, 'The Lord bless you.'" Boaz was a man of piety. The blessing of the Lord was constantly on his mind, and he yearned, he desired to be an instrument of the Lord's blessing to everyone around him. But these are what we would call his employees or his servants. And they're glad to see him. They clearly like him. They like being with him or around him. This tells us so much about the way that Boaz was as a man. Then comes a very interesting and telling question in Ruth 2:5 through 7. Whose young woman is this? Look what it says there. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." Well, essential to the worldview of patriarchy is the concept that a young woman belonged to someone, either to her father or to her husband. She was not alone in this world with no one to care for her, but she was protected and provided for. And so the words, "Whose young woman is that?" Well, the answer is she's the Moabitess. She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. Now, ordinarily, this would have been tremendously offensive to a Jewish man, a godly man. There were strict laws in the scripture against intermarriage with pagan women, and for good reason, as I've already said. But Jesus' genealogy in Matthew gives us an important piece of information about Boaz. It says in Matthew 1, 5 and 6, "Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David." Wow! Boaz's mother was Rahab, the Canaanite prostitute, rescued from the rubble of Jericho by the pledge of Joshua. She is celebrated in the books of Hebrews and James in the New Testament as a paradigm example of faith. By faith she was rescued, and by faith she lived. So Rahab, the Canaanite harlot, and Ruth, the Moabitess, were both genuine converts to the true religion. That's part of the reason that Boaz, I think, was so open to caring for her, though she was a Moabitess. We see also Ruth's diligent character in the way she carried herself that day. She was a hard worker, because the foreman said she had worked steadily out in the fields, gleaning, and that was hard work. We see also Boaz's character coming to the fore. They're woven together. In Ruth 2:8 and 9, it says, "So Boaz said to Ruth, 'My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled.'" So that's a remarkable sense of Boaz's protection, his provision, his care, his courtesy, and his awareness that a young woman like this, an attractive young woman, would be a temptation to some young men. And he wanted to get out ahead of that, make sure that nothing could happen to this young woman. We also see Ruth's humility. In verse 10, it says, "At this she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, 'Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?'" So she's humble. She understands her status there in the community. She knows that ordinarily she would not be welcome. But instead, she's discerning in Boaz not just his words, but his whole demeanor, a demeanor of kindness. And she sees it as grace. So we see Boaz's kindness and respect for Ruth's godliness. Boaz extends respect to her and cares for her. And he talks about her reputation, which is being formed even at this early stage. In Ruth 2:11, it says, "Boaz replied, 'I have been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother in your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before.'" So he's speaking about her heritage and her commitments, her faith. And he has a sense of respect for her, which is a big part of their relationship. Then he speaks a word of blessing in verse 12. "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Now, this is a vital image in this whole book of Ruth. God is pictured as a protector of the defenseless. I'm reminded of Deuteronomy 32:9-11. It says, "For the Lord's portion is his people, Jacob his allotted inheritance. In a desert land he found him. In a barren and howling waste he shielded him and cared for him. He guarded him as the apple of his eye, like an eagle that stirs up its nest and hovers over its young, that spreads its wings to catch them and carries them on its pinions." Boaz's words, his blessing to Ruth, is like that. You have come to take refuge under the wings of God. God is protector. As it says also in Deuteronomy 10:18, "He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the alien, giving him food and clothing." We see all of that at work in this very book. Well, next we see Ruth's humble and respectful answer in verse 13. "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls." It is amazing how much kind words mean to another person. Boaz was a strong man, a powerful man. He was wealthy, a man of stature. But his heart was filled with kindness toward those in his care, as shown by such gracious words. Boaz also respects very much the life of faith that Ruth has chosen to live in an alien land with a new people following a new religion, the true God. That was her faith, and Boaz saw it. We see additional kindness from Boaz to Ruth, though, in verses 14 through 16. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread, and dip it in the wine vinegar." And when she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and just leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So he's making extra provision for her. This goes beyond the gleaning laws. He wants her to have plenty. He doesn't want her to be rebuked if she should take some of the stalks accidentally. It was not part of the law that she would be plucking, standing grain, but just that which was had fallen to the ground. But even if she should do that, don't rebuke her. And actually, if you wouldn't mind, pull out some extra so that by the end of the day, she's going to be pretty well cared for. So she returns to Naomi at the end of an incredible day in verses 17 through 23. "So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah." Now, an ephah is about 22 liters, which I'm not good at the metric system, but I think that's like 11 2-liter bottles. Picture 11 2-liter bottles, plenty of barley for them to eat for a week or more. Also, we see that Ruth is not selfish. She shares all of it with Naomi. In verse 18, she carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. She added, that man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers. Then Ruth the Moabite said, he even said to me, stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain. Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed. So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So now we need to talk about the concept that Naomi mentioned of a kinsman redeemer. Naomi mentions this wonderful role that Boaz can play, the kinsman redeemer. There's a law about this. In Deuteronomy 25, 5 and 6, it says, if brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her and fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to her. The first son she bears shall carry on the name of the dead brother so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel. Well, this kinsman redeemer law is a picture of Christ as our kinsman redeemer. It says in Hebrews 2, 14 through 16, since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. It says also in Hebrews chapter 2 that Jesus is not ashamed to call us his brothers. So we are his kin, we're his family. And he laid down his life for us to redeem us from sin and death and to bring us to heaven. Jesus is the fulfillment of this beautiful kinsman redeemer role. So let's look at a summary now of Ruth chapter 2. We've seen Ruth's godly, feminine character, obedient to authority, diligent, hardworking, respectful, submissive, generous, faith-filled. We see also Boaz's godly masculine character, a man of standing, able to provide, pious, God-centered, respectful, and kind to those under his care, discerning of the faith of others, generous, thoughtful, protective, and showing foresight. These role models are beneficial for us in our present darkness.
Stay motivated to grow to spiritual maturity by accessing free biblical content at twojourneys.org. Help others in their spiritual growth by sharing these resources, praying for Two Journeys, and supporting the mission financially by visiting twojourneys.org/donate.